Welcome into the Ether, a podcast brought to you by ETHUB, the essential source for Ethereum information. Into the Ether features talks with prominent guests in the community, as well as weekly recaps of the ETHUB newsletter. Hey everyone, just a quick note before the show. All of the content we produce at ETHUB is put out free and without ads. If you appreciate what we do, the best way to support us is either by donating to us at ethub.eth or buying swag at shop.ethub.io. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Ether. Today's guest is Guy Siskind. Guy is the CEO and co-founder of Enigma, a decentralized open source protocol that lets anyone perform computations on encrypted data, which helps bring privacy to smart contracts and public blockchains. Thanks for joining me, Guy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, kind of, you know, before we dive into Enigma and what you've currently been working on, I'd like to get a little background information. I kind of like to do that with all the guests. So can you kind of just start with, you know, how did you get involved in the blockchain space?
So I got into the blockchain space seriously or like semi-seriously around 2012. That's when I got interested in it. Like many developers, you know, I was hoping that I have some edge and I could develop maybe some algo trading strategies and see how I could make money off of it. I lost interest fairly quickly from that. But then around 2013, that's really where I got hooked in a more meaningful way when I started to learn more about the technology, about how consensus protocol works and, you know, other aspects of it. And that was my point of no return. And then by 2014, as I was actually starting grad school at MIT, I knew that this was what I wanted to focus on. And actually, there was that summer of 2014, there was an MIT Bitcoin hackathon that ran for 3 months. Dan Elitzer and Jeremy Rubin, if you know them, they were the guys organizing it. And we were one of the teams to actually apply to join that hackathon. And what we set out to build was a decentralized identity protocol based on the blockchain. And we built that, we won that hackathon, and the rest is history. Like from that point on, I knew this is what I want to focus on full time.
Nice. Yeah. So is privacy and like privacy tech, you know, even before your venture into blockchain and stuff, is it something you've always been passionate about, or is it just something, yeah, you ended up getting interested in once you got into the blockchain space? Or I guess more generally, are you concerned about, you know, on the more traditional technology side, a lot of like the privacy leaks happening and stuff like that?
So I always cared about privacy, actually. I'd even take a step back. I always cared about fairness. I was one of those kids growing up that if I saw like two other kids fighting, like in the backyard, I would step in. It wasn't always very pleasant for myself. But, that level of fairness, that always tied back to privacy as well, where I think that privacy is a basic human right. It's something that everyone should care about. And I was actually, for years, I was very frustrated about how little people understand about their own privacy and how little they care about it. I do think that's changing, given all those privacy leaks. But I'd say that I've cared about it for quite a long time.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be a hot topic in, I guess, mainstream media as well as in the blockchain space, right? It's something that we desperately need on the blockchain side. All these protocols are way too easy to track. And if you accidentally send a transaction to someone, they can kind of see your entire financial history. It's just kind of a mess. So something I'm interested in as well, for sure. So I guess, you know, I would transition now. I think that's good background. I want to transition a little bit into just Enigma, and I want to focus the rest of this podcast time on talking about what you're building and all that. But I guess first, can you just kind of start with a high level description of what exactly the Enigma protocol is?
Sure. So Enigma is, very simply put, a decentralized protocol for running secret contracts. In that sense, putting layer one and layer two things aside, the idea is very, very similar to how current smart contract blockchains work. In current smart contract blockchains like Ethereum, basically, you know that you can run smart contracts and they give you correctness. you know that like whatever code you're gonna run on the in that smart contract, you're gonna get the right result, and no one can tamper with it. But that's really only half of the puzzle. The second half is the privacy aspect. How can you run smart contracts, but not only be confident that you're gonna get the right result, but also be confident that no one in the network can learn anything that's happening inside of that execution environment? No one can learn, you know, what the inputs are, what the interim variables that are being computed over inside of that computation are, what the outputs are, and so forth. And that's really the problem that Enigma tries to solve at a high level. More from a technological or architectural standpoint, essentially Enigma sets out to be more of a layer 2 network. So essentially we have our own network of nodes. They do all of the heavy lifting. So, you know, if you run actually execute secret contracts or computations in the network, nodes in our network, they do that for you. All of the data storage, the encrypted data storage, that is also done on our network. So in that sense, it's fully functional. But the one aspect that right now we are outsourcing to Ethereum is really everything that relates to consensus. So we take all of the data that we have, we take all of the computations, and we basically store hashes and small proofs on Ethereum and kind of validate against them from time to time. So that's kind of a high level of the architecture. You have Ethereum for verification and for sending payouts, and you have the Enigma network running privacy preserving computations.
Gotcha. Is this solution blockchain agnostic? And, you know, if it is, how does that kind of work? Because obviously, like, all these protocols, like Ethereum to EOS to whatever it might be, are pretty different in how they function. So how does that kind of work for the Enigma network?
Right. So right now it's not. That is definitely the goal. But Ethereum is the biggest ecosystem that we care the most about. So that made the, you know, a reasonable first step. Right now it is a layer 2 to Ethereum, which functions in two ways. First of all, technically, everything that we do is basically then verified on Ethereum. That's what I mentioned a few minutes ago. And the second aspect is that, you know, even if we end up developing our own blockchain for kind of like upkeep and safekeeping and ordering messages and all that, we still built a bridge to Ethereum that basically allows you to run, you know, to run some part of your contract on Enigma with privacy and potentially more scale, and then the rest of it continue to do that on Ethereum. And that aspect, you know, you can think about building similar bridges to other networks and get the same goal, but I do agree that there's some integration overhead in doing so.
Gotcha. So essentially you can think of it as a layer 2 on top of Ethereum for now. So obviously, you know, I think you've alluded to some of them, but there's got to be some different components to how this network operates. So do you mind diving a little bit deeper into, I know you mentioned secret nodes and I know there's consensus nodes, but, you know, just kind of like, I guess, what these different nodes and components to your network do and, you know, the roles that they play?
So there are a few components in our system. The main one is secret nodes. Secret nodes are basically those who execute secret contracts. They basically do all the heavy lifting and the computations, and they store all of the state data that relates to those contracts, pretty similar to how full nodes in Ethereum operate today. The other aspect in our system is something called the key management node. A key management node is somewhat of a stopgap or a temporary solution. So one very interesting aspect of Enigma is that data for secret contracts has to stay end-to-end encrypted at all times. That means that, you know, each secret contract basically has its own state, and that state can never be revealed to anyone in the network. So that means that the network has to have a lot of keys that it stores and maintains, and there needs to be proper redundancy, and those keys only needs to be transferred, you know, to the right secret nodes. And there's a whole process around that. That's actually one of the novelties and one of the I think, more the trickier aspects of the technology. And for that right now, there are a bunch of specifically designated key management nodes that they take care of all of that upkeep. We have plans on actually completely distributing that across the network. Right now, it's just us running these. And the other stakeholders in the system, of course, there's Ethereum, which helps in obtaining final consensus. And there are developers, just as usual, who write secret contracts and deploy them to our network. And there are users who basically send transactions, we call them tasks, that are actually invoking secret contract executions.
Gotcha. So, you know, you have a bunch of stakeholders over on the Enigma network, and, you know, a majority of those stakeholders are people running these nodes or node operators, and kind of incentivizing nodes is, I guess I would put it, a hot topic these days in crypto. I mean, to run a node on Bitcoin, Ethereum, obviously it's all pretty much altruism. You're not rewarded in any way. There are some efforts underway to like get monetization around like providing data to light clients and whatnot, but, you know, how does incentivization of node operators on Enigma work, and can anybody be a node operator on the network?
So the incentivization mechanism is basically proof of stake. So the way we do it is essentially there are epochs, which are basically some time frame. In each time frame, you know, you generate some randomness, and using that randomness, you kind of shuffle the nodes by stake. So if you have more stake, you're more likely to be selected to run computations in that epoch. And the way this is run is we select a single secret node, and in the future the idea is to select more than a single secret node, to be tied into a single secret contract, and that is proportional to your stake. And then at the end of each epoch, you get compensated by fees for all of the transactions that were sent to a specific secret contract, plus you get some fixed block rewards.
Gotcha. So it's somewhat similar then to how ETH2 proof of stake will work. So, I mean, how many nodes are running on the, or how many secret nodes are on the network now? And like, what do you kind of see as sufficient for the security of the network? Because, I mean, this is kind of something that people discuss a lot when it comes to ETH2, right? Like, how many nodes is sufficiently decentralized, right? I don't know if there's a proper answer to that, but, you know, how many kind of node operators do you have at the moment? And I guess, what do you kind of view as sufficient on Enigma?
So actually, we just announced today that, you know, our testnet, network testnet, we already have a developer testnet out, but our network testnet where people can run nodes is coming up in December, so next month. So we don't have nodes yet, but we expect to have them next month. We're also going to run kind of like Cosmos, something we call a Genesis game, to actually select the initial cohort that will be joining the network. So I actually think this is something interesting at Enigma. So usually, you know, Enigma, we use something called trusted execution environments that helps us get both privacy and also some degree of security, so that, you know, nodes cannot tamper with the results. It becomes the bar to tamper with the results is much, much, much higher if you're running a trusted execution environment. And while I would argue that you still want a decentralized network, and we still want to get to, you know, a decentralized network that is in the thousands and tens of thousands, you know, when it comes to what is enough, I would say that when you're using something like TEs, you can get by with much less. Because, you know, say you have a network without TEs and you have 10 nodes, then it's fairly trivial to find some of those 10 nodes and collude and break the system. But if you have something like TEs, well, now there's a much higher barrier to actually break those nodes and do any damage to the system. The one aspect where you still want as many nodes as you can is for redundancy, right? The more nodes that you have in the system, the more people can compete for their incentives, and arguably the more censorship resistant the system is, and also the more reliable it is. So I don't think there's a right number. I would say that in our framework, like, you can definitely do with less than compared to other networks, but you know, for performance, censorship resistance, and reliability reasons, you still want to get as high as you can.
Gotcha. Yeah, so you mentioned, you know, node operators will be incentivized through some type of like reward outside of fees. So I guess that just like, you know, Ethereum will have or has now, that means there's a slight inflation mechanism in there. Do you have any kind of estimates around like what a node operator could plan to, you know, gain and by running on the network?
So that's a good question. I'm hoping Testnet would give us some more concrete data. We ran some modeling. There's an organization called Secret Nodes, which was actually built. It's a community endeavor to actually help kind of like research these, build educational material, and help people get started with staking on Enigma. And from some analysis that they've done as well, like we are hoping that this is going to be in the low double digits. So hopefully, in the early days, you know, hopefully we can expect something like, you know, 10% plus for interest in staking. But it's hard to say until we see how many people stake. The more people stake, obviously those rewards go down because there's a fixed amount of rewards paid out every epoch.
Gotcha. Yeah, so you just kind of talked about this transition from the testnet to like launching a mainnet. Can you just kind of touch on that and that transition? And I guess just in general, kind of in your mind, where the product stands right now? When you say kind of going to a more mainnet launch, does that mean you're hoping, you know, at that point to onboard Ethereum applications onto this and stuff?
People can already start building on this. They just can't run it live yet. But that's expected to change in the weeks and months to come. The way I see the transition right now, well, right now we are in the code is pretty much ready. That's why we're ready. We're pretty much ready to launch testnet. We've been building a pretty significant infrastructure to help us test and debug the network. There's still a lot more work going into this. I think the whole idea of how do you properly test internally and externally decentralized network, that's a very, very tough problem that, you know, not enough people talk about and discuss, like, what's the best way to do this. So that's a challenge we're working on right now. But once that's done, then you're going to have Genesis game, which is where nodes can actually basically test themselves with fake testnet money and see like what it feels like to run a node. And one aspect I didn't mention, for when mainnet is released and after testnet is launched, then Genesis game, then mainnet comes, we will select 50 nodes to be the first stakers in the network. Those 50 nodes, 30 of them are selected very objectively, so that's good. There's actually a whole UI that has been built, not by us, by some external company, to basically check like what your uptime is, how much you stake, and you know how many computations you ran. Factor that in a very simple formula, and whoever gets the highest score is selected. And then of the 20 other nodes, the goal is to get people who have, you know, helped Enigma, helped the ecosystem, and are long-term aligned in supporting the network. So, you know, like some operators have built like a block explorer for Enigma, so they will probably get like a slot like that and so forth. But that's the plan ahead for the next like 4 months.
Got it. So does that mean at any time on the mainnet there's just 50 nodes? So there's a cap on the node size?
Yes, in day one, there's going to be a 50-node cap on the network. That's going to be removed in the first hard fork, which is expected a few months later.
So, you know, one last question I think on the protocol level, and then I want to shift to kind of like applications and use cases that you envision Enigma enabling and working with Ethereum applications on. But, you know, anytime you talk about layer two, I think people think scaling, like they don't think privacy, even though obviously Enigma is privacy focused, and even for other layer two solutions I think privacy is kind of a hidden benefit. But I guess on the flip side of that, does the layer 2-ness of this protocol for Ethereum, does it improve scale at all? Or how does that kind of work on the network?
So it does improve scale, and part of our concrete goals is to improve scale. Essentially, the way we envision Enigma is a way to boost usability of blockchains. We don't care as much about being layer 1, layer 2. We care about helping the ecosystem grow and build more useful things. That's really why we focus on being first and foremost a layer 2 to Ethereum, because let's face it, all of the developers right now in the ecosystem, well, most of them are in Ethereum, and that's definitely the right market to attack and attract. The way Enigma is built, you know, there's a lot of projects working on scalability. So while we have a lot of ideas and a lot of things that we're doing around scalability, we toned that down a bit and focused more on the privacy aspect, which is more novel. And I think to some extent is even a harder problem to solve. So we have what I call right now a limited scalability. So we use Ethereum 1, that's probably going to be solved with Ethereum 2, but for now Ethereum 1. We use that for consensus. That means that the latency in the Enigma system is at best the latency in the Ethereum system. But the level of scalability, so you can't really put more tasks in right now. But the level of, but the depth of tasks that you can do is much higher. So the idea is you can run bigger computations, more elaborate computations on Enigma right now, even computations that extend beyond one block.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's nice. So getting privacy and scale at the same time is something that the Ethereum network needs desperately. So that's good to hear. I want to shift focus a little bit to, you know, where Enigma can be applied, right? So I guess I'll start with first, I guess, what applications are you most excited about that this technology can help and enable? And I guess maybe put it in the frame of either applications that are already live on the Ethereum mainnet or might be coming in the future that, you know, really need a privacy aspect.
So actually, one thing that I'm really excited about is Salad. That is an application that we developed, and we actually are looking into deploying that as one of the first meaningful applications on the Enigma network. Salad is a coin mixer for Ethereum. And the reason I really like Salad is because it very very simply kind of lays out the benefits that Enigma can provide, you know, to Ethereum today, right? And even if you take Salad and compare it to other approaches like ZK SNARK-based mixers, like you can really see the benefits of kind of broadening your view and seeing what other things can do. Another use case that I'm really excited about is everything that relates to machine learning or financial reporting. So I'll give two examples that we've been seeing. One of them is around credit scoring. Credit scoring, for example, for lending applications is a very necessary piece. But at the same time, people don't want to share their historical financial data. Definitely on the blockchain where everything like is you know public. If I use like Compound or some other lending application that wants to build a more sophisticated model on lending worthiness, basically credit score, then I don't wanna send to a smart contract all of my public keys so that people can trace back all of my transactions forever and ever. So what's interesting with Enigma is that you can do something like you can send your encrypted addresses to an Enigma smart secret contract. That secret contract computes over the encrypted addresses. You know, it takes out the transactions that you've done, does some machine learning modeling, and gets and spits out the credit score. That credit score is then being sent to Ethereum and can be used to decide like, you know, what kind of interest you should get and whatnot. So that's something I'm very excited about. And another use case that I'm really excited about, that's actually a real use case we've been talking to some partner with. I'm sure you heard about the recent IRS guidelines around crypto taxes. So a lot of people right now need to basically see how they can deal with them, and it's a big mess. And there are companies popping up and basically offering services to help you kind of, you know, make sense out of this. But one such company came to us and said, look, we don't have a track record. People don't want to share, you know, their financial history on the blockchain with us. That's a big issue because, you know, once you share your data on the blockchain once, like you lose that forever. It's then very, very hard to break that linkability going forward. So for that issue, what they want to do is they want to do a similar thing. They want people to encrypt, prove that they own some wallets, encrypt all of the transactions, and then inside of a secret contract, they just want to spit out their tax liability.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it seems like those three use cases are very exciting to me. And it seems like the possibilities will be endless when it comes to privacy, because like so many things need it. And, you know, I'm always curious how like the user experience side of this will look too. So I guess the Coin Mixer is a great example. I mean, we have some solutions on main chain right now for Ethereum. I think the most promising is probably like Tornado Cash, but there's still like UX issues. And one of the keys is you have to really wait for the set to grow like more and more so that when you withdraw, you're not easily traceable. So there's some UX barriers there. Can you just kind of talk about, you know, say I'm an Ethereum user and I have 10 Ether and I want my next send to be private to this new clean address I have and then no one can trace back from there. What's the user experience going to look like to me if I'm using, you know, you called it Salad, this mixer that's on Enigma? Like, how's that going to look?
That's actually the main reason why we are very excited about Salad. It completely prioritizes usability in that sense. So what's interesting with Salad is there is only one transaction per user. So I'm coming in, I'm sending in my encrypted recipient addresses, the Enigma network shuffles it, and then there's one transaction that pays everyone out. So if I'm a user, I can do this completely non-interactively. I can just send a transaction with my recipient address, and I know that, you know, whenever that mix happens and that is configurable, I'm gonna have my money in and I don't have to come back. I don't have to look for a relayer and send them a transaction. I don't have to send the transaction on an additional transaction on chain. And also, you know, using it in our network, it has, I think, about between 5 to 10x gas cost saving. So it's pretty meaningful.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm sure people listening are really interested in this and trying it out. Is this app out there for people to test, or kind of what's the roadmap for this? And then I guess on top of that, how can people kind of go out and play with applications on your test net right now?
So for playing with applications, I would say wait a few weeks. So December, Salad will be live on testnet in December. We've shown the demo. We have the code out. So all of that you can already play with and get more information about that. Also, another aspect I'm really excited about Salad is that we are trying to get potential Ethereum wallets to integrate it. I can tell you that there's been pretty amazing reception. Because of the UX issue, because that users don't have to wait, they don't have to keep their browsers open, they don't have to come back and send a second transaction. So that solving that UX issue is actually seems to be the thing that moves the needle for integration with existing wallet providers.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, I'm excited to check that out. I guess, you know, one question that's kind of just popped in my head as we're talking. I mean, every network, every crypto network has an attack vector, and with that attack vector, something could happen, right? So in proof of work, a miner can maliciously start manipulating, you know, the consensus on the chain. In proof of stake, you know, someone could do very similar attacks and then they could be slashed. You know, layer twos have certain attack vectors too. Kind of what is the attack vector to Enigma, and if that were to happen, like what's basically the worst that can happen? Like can data that had already been computated in the past be revealed? Just kind of what does that look like? I'm curious in my head to try and visualize it.
Sure. So there's, you know, like any system, there are several attack vectors depending on like what assumptions you make. So first and foremost, we are using trusted execution environments. There are from time to time attacks on these trusted execution environments. mostly what's known as speculative execution attacks. I think that these are overblown. I think generally speaking, these, you know, as long as you do two things, you keep up with the latest patches, and pretty much that should always be the case. And as long as anything that touches encryption, decryption, cryptographic operations is side channel resistant, then that attack vector is extremely minimized. Theoretically, you could try to kind of mount a physical attack. I don't know of any physical attack, you know, trying to actually break the processor die and then trying to extract data with some outside device. I don't know of any such attack that has been successful, but it's theoretically possible. So that's one aspect. A way to mitigate this very simply is, at least on the correctness aspect, so less so on the privacy aspect, but at least on ensuring that no one can tamper with, like, you know, people's balances and stuff like that, is to, just like blockchains do, don't rely on a single node to run a computation. At the same time, don't rely on the entire network running the computation, which is what Ethereum does, but maybe sample a few nodes to run that computation in parallel. And, you know, if you get, you know, if you select a group in random, you know, the likelihood of that being broken is very, very small. The other aspect is, I'd say, pretty much like other proof of stake systems. So if there's too much centralization around the stake, which I think is a big concern, the number of actors that you need to compromise is significantly diminished. This is more of a problem around censorship resistance and around availability. I would say these are the main attack vectors that come to mind.
Yeah, that does make sense. And do you have any kind of slashing mechanism built in, similar to like E2 would? So if you have a malicious actor, can you either slash their stake, or is there some kind of like blacklisting mechanism?
Not yet. And the reason is, and I won't go into detail into this, but the reason is that, you know, we had to prioritize some aspects in the development process. And there are still some data withholding attacks right now that they're not as much as, like, you know, critical to the system. But if you penalize, that might lead to griefing like one party, because it's hard to uniquely identify, was this party the one who cheated or the other party was the one who cheated? So slashing didn't seem fair. We have a solution for that, but that's going to come up in the next release.
So we've talked about the protocol and the history and where you're at now, and then into kind of applications and A, what you're building, and B, what you're excited about. But, you know, then the next step from there, I think, is like adoption, right? So I think to this point in Ethereum, I've personally been disappointed with the adoption and progress of layer two solutions. And yours stands out a little bit differently from, I guess, what I've referred to in the past as layer two, when I'm mainly talking about scaling. But obviously, you know, you've described it as layer two as well. Kind of what are the biggest struggles and hurdles for adoption of layer two in general in Ethereum? And are you surprised by the lack of adoption so far?
Honestly, I'm not surprised. I don't know if that's a popular opinion or not, but, you know, I've been in the space for a while, and looking at the craziness that happened around 2017, like, we've seen a lot of hyped devs and even a lot of non-dev people who tried to build castles in the sky, but really didn't know what they were talking about or what they really want to develop or why they need blockchain and this technology. I think that's changing. I think DeFi is a great example where that's changing for the better. But truth be told, I think this is a longer marathon than people expect. And I think we're seeing a constant upward trajectory, and that's fine. But that is still the case to some extent. Like, we still get developers who aren't really sure, like, why they need these technologies and why they need to use that. And I think there's a lot of burn cycles going around that. And I do think that the one of the biggest issues in general adoption, and that's not just for Enigma, that's for Ethereum and pretty much any other actor in the space, is that we are catering mostly the hardcore people who are interested in the space. And that is a very, very small group of people. And maybe that's the right, maybe that's the beachhead market and that's the right way to start things. But at some point, if we can cross the chasm, then that's going to be our downfall.
Yeah, I strongly agree with that. I think that's our biggest flaw is marketing to people already in the space and not thinking about the 99.9999% of people that aren't in it or interested in it yet, right? So I definitely think as a community, we need to shift that mentality. I fully agree there. I guess one last question, and just kind of talking through this, and you know, I've had Aztec Protocol on the podcast before, and I've talked to many people about privacy solutions. You know, for people just kind of wondering as these start to come online and mainnet, and you know, Aztec's going through their ignition ceremony, and you're talking about your team hopefully going live on mainnet soon. How do you see these solutions playing with each other in the future? Like, do you think there's space for multiple of them? And kind of where do you see your layer two privacy solutions standing out versus, say, like a layer one solution, like an Aztec or whatever it might be?
So I'll start with an example, and then it's easier to branch out. I think people often stick to like buzzwords, and maybe that's the level of maturity in the space right now. But in practice, like all of these different technologies have their own use cases and reasons to exist and to interoperate with each other. So let's take Salad as an example. Salad is a coin mixer. You know, you can compare and contrast it to Tornado and stuff like that. In many ways, it's superior. In some ways, there are some other trade-offs where it's like not like, you know, Tornado may be superior. But if you take Aztec in this example, Aztec is, for example, completely complementary. So you can use Aztec to hide amounts, for example, and then you can use either the Tornado-based, like ZK-SNARKs-based mixers or Salad to shuffle the participants and hide the inputs and the senders and receivers. So a lot of these technologies can usually play together. And when they can't and they compete, there are actually different trade-offs and different reasons where you wanna use one or the other.
Gotcha. Yeah, it'd be nice to see them all kind of play off of each other, and then we get this ultimate privacy suite, right? That's the ideal thing in my mind. So, well, you know, what's the best way for people? Obviously, you've got a lot of updates and launches coming down the pipeline, it sounds like. What's the best way for people, you know, to keep up with you or just keep up with the Enigma protocol and your team and updates in general?
Well, the best place is really to follow our blog. We try to write a lot. We try to put a lot of stuff out there. And obviously our Twitter, you know, we just had a community call. You know, it was today, but by the time this is posted, it's not going to be today. But we just had a community call, our first one, with a lot of people who basically came in and asked questions. So if you follow our public channels, you can pretty much learn everything. If you are a developer, then the base places are the dev forum. That's forum.enigma.co. There's a lot of interesting content there. There's also people helping other people out to get started in writing secret contracts. And also there's our API documentation. You can read that from our website and basically get started writing secret contracts very, very quickly and basically test out if this is something that you need for your use case.
Great. Well, Guy, I really appreciate you joining me, and I'm very interested in this project and excited to keep up with the progress that's going to be coming out in the coming months.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Into the Ether. You can subscribe to the podcast and newsletter at ethub.substack.com, find our website at ethub.io, and follow us on Twitter at @econoar and @sassel0x.